As you can see, I am not a real formal speaker. I'm an old nurse, used to work ER, worked ICU, worked quality improvement, outcomes research, which led me into public health, and I do a lot of community-based research now, partnering with groups in the community. And a part of my love is with what is very comfortable to me, which is about uninsured populations and doing administrative code analyses and understanding. I've done focus groups. I've been in this area for like about 12 years. So as is true with most folks, I do a lot of free work. This happened to be supporting a student project, so there were no relationships, didn't get any money, nothing. But what I'd like to, my PhD is in community psychology, so I've had exposure, you know, like to all the EPI advanced analyses and some of the psychometrics analyses. I was lucky enough that we had a new faculty member who actually, she came from University of Evanston, and she was a psychometrician. So I got to learn a new technique that I had never really been exposed to before. And again, I think the big message for me out of this experience was, it's like, dang, people, if you're going to do some sort of a survey out in the community, get yourself a researcher to work with. So, you know, we can go through this, blah, blah, blah. Everybody knows about the Healthy 2010 objectives and how we want more people into primary care and having a usual source of care. You know, it's kind of a moving target, the number of uninsured. For those of us in Sedgwick County, Wichita is like now the second largest population-wise in Kansas. And you guys, it's laughable for you because there's like 2 million people in the whole state. But we are a population center. So we have a lot of aircraft manufacturing. So when the downturn came, there were aircraft employees who were impacted in addition to the chronically uninsured. So right now we're kind of hovering, the latest stats, it's anywhere between 14-16%. So we know that insurance is the entree into the existing healthcare system for the most part. So the cost, pre-existing conditions, etc., there are many things that serve as barriers. So, jumping right into the methods, we wanted to describe the perceived healthcare services of low-income uninsured adults in Wichita MSA who use safety net clinics, and we also wanted to understand the dimensions of these underlying preferences. So, again, this was kind of what Kyle described. There was a large community collaborative that gathered. We have a project access program. It was Medical Society, United Way of the Plains, big group. Kind of looking at navigation was one perspective. But the other one, the Wichita Small Business Association, a lot of small employers looking at trying to come together and maybe create an insurance product that some of our uninsured people could use. And that's why this actual survey was done. So it was a long survey, and it wasn't constructed by me, and it would have been a lot better if I would have been involved, but I wasn't asked. So there, it was really interesting because one question out of this entire survey asked about what are your healthcare preferences. So they asked the people who took it to rank all of these services, and there were 8 total. But you know what was really interesting, because part of this was done online, but part of this was done at our low-income safety net clinics, you know, try and get some balance. Well, only the people who are uninsured answered that question, which, you know, kind of makes sense, because if you've got insurance, you don't have to rank. You have access, you have entree to these healthcare services. So that's why I thought it was rather important to do a little further exploration of this. So, you know, out of this entire sample, there were about 104 uninsured. And again, here's what this sample looks like in comparison to Sedgwick County estimates. So you can see this kind of goes with the literature. They're a little bit younger. This population, a little bit more female, that fits with the literature, and because this very much fits the demographics of Wichita. And again, about 50-50 on marital status. And actually, I was a little bit surprised. I think this is indicative, this some college or technical school, that's indicative of this the population that's been laid off from our aircraft manufacturing. So again, fairly even split between full-time, part-time, self-employed, but definitely a large percentage of low-income represented. And here's the other thing that I think is somewhat different than the general perceived health status, is that most of them were perceived good, fair, or poor, which is, you know, when you start looking at the demographics and you use some of these psychometric analyses, you have to have a good understanding of what's the general behaviors and attitudes. I think it helps substantially. So, are we at five yet? You got to tell me, or I'll talk all day. Okay, great. So here's all of the different services that were listed. And when you do traditional analyses, I mean, most of the time you get that percent who answer a certain way. Well, if you've got that kind of data, take it to the next level. There's a lot more information than what's available on face value. So just to give you an appreciation, here by gender, here's some of the preferences, you know, for primary care, more women, just the opposite way for men, for medications, for emergency services, more of a preference by the men. So again, this kind of follows what you see in the literature as well. So here, when you look at it by age, and again, this all makes sense. You know, as you get older, more of a need for hospitalization, a little bit of variability in preference for primary care, testing, medications, specialty care. Again, you see an age gradient in that, and I do believe that makes sense. Mental health services didn't even really enter into the scale at all. So the other was kind of like PTOT, home care, chiropractic. It was kind of an amalgamation of services that you would probably go through a primary care provider to access. So now, multidimensional unfolding. Now, because Karen was working with me and she was very familiar, she was actually, even though this was a smaller sample, this statistic is okay to use within a smaller sample. Naturally, as a researcher, I want to repeat it to see if it carries over to a larger scale. But what we found, I did some cluster analysis on the data first to kind of understand how was this group of approximately 100 people, how were they going to group? And so that helped us in identifying that we should have a three-dimensional solution. And in essence, when you look at these different dimensions, it relies on relating your known, what do you know about this population, about this group, and figuring out what do the plots mean. And having, so we named the dimensions. And believe me, I had folks come in and we looked at this together. So it is not just the world according to Ruth. It, you know, at least not completely, but predominantly. So this is what happens, and this is why I love this kind of work, because it's visual. I'm an applied researcher, I'm an action researcher, and I do not believe in doing analysis for the sake of publication. If I cannot take it back out into the community, I'm not doing it. So, really cool, guys. This is an SPSS, and you grab the edge of the cube, and you start spinning it. And you're looking, okay, how can I make sense of this? So you can see we named our dimensions, presence of chronic disease, cost, and likely to use. So let's look at these one at a time, because I think it's a little bit easier to understand. So you can see these represent my groups, my clusters. They one and two, those were predominantly women, and there was a real spread of age. So it went all the way from the 19-year-olds up to the 64-year-olds. The one thing that was different about group three is that they were more represented by younger participants. So when you look at this, you're kind of looking. The stars are the different services. And so when you see, you've kind of got a combination of how they map up and looking at, you know, the different clusters and what services do they cluster around. So you can see red and green, those were looking more at your specialty care, the testing, emergency services, hospitalization, those that kind of carry us away from primary care. But you can see also for this, for group one, although there's still, you know, there's still some outliers, looking more at prioritizing primary care, pharmacy, and again, mental health on any one of these dimensions. It was never listed. Okay, now, for dimensions one and three, the cost and the likely to use. So again, you are seeing specialty, hospitalization, test. These are clustering upward, but you also see this is it's a different perspective in terms of looking at likely to use primary care, the need for medications, and then ER services and especially hospitalization more outside for these two dimensions. And then dimensions two or three, you know, this is my read. This is my read on the population is that if we don't start asking people about the chronic disease status in our surveys, it's something that really needs to be embedded because I think this would have explained quite a lot. So again, you see the clusterings around ER, specialty care, hospitalization and testing. So when I take these back to my community group, and granted, this is, you know, you have to kind of work at this, and you don't get to look at just like an odds ratio. It's really using multiple levels of understanding of our evidence base and application to this sample. So although primary care was ranked number one, there were some variations that were observed in services by gender and age. So dimension one reflected the patient's likeliness to use that health service. Dimension two appeared to differentiate between services utilized by patients who have a chronic disease versus those who have no chronic disease. And then dimension three seems to reflect the cost of services, their perception. 2 minutes, okay, hey, two more slides, isn't that lucky? All right, for limitations, naturally, there was a selection bias because this was a voluntary, convenient sample. So self-selection and sample representation, it may not carry true to all to all groups. So measurement bias, now this is a biggie, instrument construction, there should have been some other key variables embedded into that. Response rate, naturally, you know, everybody wants a larger sample size, but we worked with what we had. It's also conducted during an economic recession, and there is some sampling bias in that as well. So we've already talked about this one. I want to be included. Invite me to the table. I believe I make a huge difference. So I would also recommend pilot testing. I think that really teases out problems with interpretation of your survey as well. Chronic disease status, get it in there, and factors that influence decision-making. So I think the questions could have been posed better. There's a lot of different analyses you can do with multidimensional scaling. And I do community health assessment, planning, etc. And I've read articles, they're not so much U.S.-based, but that you get to use this and it'll tease out the preferences of the groups and it kind of depoliticizes the decision-making. So, bigger sample as well. Conclusion, We all know the disparities and in access and coverage, they continue to exist. There's a big push right now to get folks into primary care services, and I would love to talk to you about a case management eval that I did, around that. And then the visual representation of data, very helpful in helping non-researchers to grasp the concepts. And naturally, we need additional financial support. We're moving in that direction, but more is still needed. And then finally, further exploration of value associated with the purchase of healthcare insurance. I think even though people are uninsured, there may need to be different types of insurance products available to them. And that takes me to the end.